Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Yeah, there it is. When that robot voice popped in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in.
ELC.
Especially if you are one of our geeks and speaks in this podcast. Power you through a workout or a run, or even if you're just commuting or you're rootin' tootin', whatever you're dootin', we're gonna be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness. I cracked myself up because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our patrons over at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. Their generosity, their support ensures that our show can continue. Oh my goodness, we are so grateful to our patrons. We'd love for you to be one. If you decide you find value in our show and you would like to see it continue, you can get cool stuff in return. You can get ad-free episodes and video versions of the show, although not this week, and an entire bonus show we call Paid DLC. It's a ton of fun. It features Lana Bashinsky alongside myself and Christian Spicer, and it's crazy chaos that bubbles forth every Wednesday. What did we talk about this week? Is a scary, spooky stuff, I think, was last week's topic. It's so much fun. The patrons love it. And you can be one by signing up at patreon.com/DLCpod. DLC, this show, of course, is the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy I call when I hear a sound I can't explain, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everybody. And in addition to paid DLC, this Friday starts another bonus show to patrons. Again, patreon.com/DLCpod that we're calling Feeling This, that are conversations Alex Solman and I had about the feelings of specific games and genres. We talk about Doom. We talk about old school brawlers, driving games. Alex has been on the show, friend of the show, and an awesome developer as well. And we dive into what makes games feel good. So starting on Fridays, season one of that begins. So Feeling This Fridays, if you will, coming to patrons as more good stuff that folks can get by supporting the show.
Amazing. Amazing. You never know what you might get by doing us a solid and supporting the show. Of course, we'd never want anyone to support the show if it puts you in any form of financial hardship. But you can support the show for free by posting a review, giving us 5 stars on whatever platform you download the show on. Or even better, just tell a friend. Tell a friend. Suggest the show to someone else. We appreciate that as well. But we got a big show for you today. We got tons of games to talk about.
Dude,
in fact,
so much stuff
to talk about. We got one of my most anticipated games of the remaining part of the year. We're going to get an early preview of, because We have an awesome guest joining us here on the show. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh, I'm excited because DLC stands for dominant leader of coverage. Because we have self-described number one games journalist and our friend back with us. Imran Khan is here. Hey, Imran.
Hey, hi. How you guys doing?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Doing well. Not self-described, to be fair. I won that in Kind of Funny Wrestling.
There you go.
By pinning Jeff Grubb with an RKO. So I am officially, and I've never wrestled again since then, so I can't lose it.
Retired undefeated.
Yeah, the number one game journalist.
Well, pardon me for not attributing it correctly, because that is objectively your title now and forevermore. Yes. Congratulations. We're happy to have you. It's always awesome to chat with you.
Hold on, real quick. Eat it, Grub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the thing that I love just making fun of Jeff Grubb for. Like, and honestly, more people should make fun of Jeff Grubb. But like, whenever I have to tag Jeff Grubb in something, I refer to him as the number three game journalist. And I think, like, we did a podcast a couple of months ago back when, you know, I had a job. And I told him, like, hey, you should put that into your Twitter profile. And he said, okay, sir. And then just did it. So I hold that power over him for now until whenever, I suppose.
That's amazing.
Forever, because like you said, you never go back, right? Like once you're done, it's like you're not trying to Tom Brady and get it again. You did it. You're done. And you just forever talk smack.
It's like how when you become president, your name is Mr. President for the rest of your life.
There's that. I don't want to spoil one of my favorite shows of the year, but there's that wonderful show on the Paramount Plus called Players. I don't know if you watched that, Imran, but it was about esports, and one of the characters in that esports game starts a brand called Never Lost, I think, and it's because he retires right before they can lose any games. So, like during the first match that they're in, he retires and he never lost. He's like, I never lost, and he becomes this big brand. It's very funny.
Yeah, that's kind of when we had Game Informer show, there was a like back of the box trivia where you guess a game based on a description on the back of the box. I was on one episode of that. And then I got laid off after that. So technically, I am undefeated at Back of the Box Trivia.
There you go. There you go. I love it. And, you know, Jeff Grubb moved away from Denver right after I moved here. So
seems personal.
He broke my heart.
Well, he's Denver's number one game journalist. So that's why he left. And then you got there and he forever has the title because he left. You can't challenge him for it.
I think it gets passed down to me. I hope. I don't know. Who else lives here? All right. Well, we got tons to get to, fellas. So let's get to the meat of things and start the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments or questions, parting gifts, whatever you like. We love hearing from you at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also participate in one of our communities. We have a Discord that is called 5x5 DLC. You can hang out there. Or you could visit our subreddit, which is also 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Great folks hanging out in both places. We love chatting with them. But Imran, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I suppose it's fresh now, so why don't we talk a little bit about the G4 closing.
The G4
today.
Of it all, yes. Yes, I'm sure this is something that you have dealt with firsthand in a very similar situation. But we got news literally just a couple of hours before we record here Sunday evening on, what is it, the 16th tonight, October 16th. Comcast is pulling the plug on the reborn G4 TV, which has only been in existence in this new form for about a year. Obviously, G4 TV was a big deal when 20 years ago, when it was really the only place you could get video game type coverage daily or frequently. I worked for G4 several times for long periods. Imran, I'm sure you have
you know, having just gone through this, you know, sort of large numbers of people losing jobs very abruptly. It doesn't sound like folks got a lot of heads up on this happening.
Yeah.
What's your take?
There were tweets from people saying, hey, I found out from tweets about this thing that I lost my job. So it, like, for it to happen on a Sunday is just absurd. Like, this is, there's never a good way to lay people off, but there's like better and worse ways. And this is one of the worst ways of just saying effective immediately, we're done. And there's going to be a lot of people who are like, not necessarily tutting, but talking about how this is fairly predictable, that it was kind of unclear what G4 was doing, and they're not wrong, but it's such a, what an awful way for a company to swoop in and show that they don't care about anyone who got them to that point. And to say that we're done. This is not profitable. Sorry, we're good. And for people to have to learn, they don't know what's happening tomorrow. They don't know how, like, are they having a conversation with HR? Are they getting severance checks in the mail? Or like, as somebody who literally just went through this, that at least I knew what my next week looked like. This is a, like, I've signed non-disparagement agreements at this point. So any company I refer to at this point is a totally hypothetical company or one I did not work for. But man, these corporations are just complete assholes in the way they treat their people. And I cannot believe at this point in the year 2022, when this is so easy to spread on the internet and for people to like immediately see what a shitty PR move this is to do it this way, that companies are still working this way where they will either drag this out or cut it abruptly in a point where they don't think it matters to them. Like, at least for the PR perspective, let people come in on Monday and talk to them about it first. Don't let it literally be a thing on Twitter. But again, I'm not shocked by the closure or the fact that they did it this way, but I'm incredibly disappointed by it.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is baffling to me why these things seem to be reported in the press before it seems that the people who are most affected are even aware of it. That just seems like the worst possible way to handle those kinds of situations. And it doesn't make any sense. It just reeks of cowardice. But mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know the details. I don't know how that all went down. I'm not privy to any of that. But certainly, if it is as it appears, it really does feel like a craven way to handle that, and not one that does any service to the folks that have been working there for a year now. Yeah. Obviously, hey, go ahead, Christian.
Jeff, check your phone. I don't know if you've checked your. I know you've been talking. I wanted to make sure you didn't talk too much before you just checked your phone.
Christian just fired me from DLC via text. I got a text here that says you are fired from DLC. Christian Spicer.
I wanted to make sure you saw that before you talked too much more. So I wanted to hear it from me. As I was listening to this story, I was like, oh yeah, I tweeted it already, but I don't know if Jeff saw that. So I wanted to let you know.
Christian drunk with fictional power.
I found out, I mean, to get back in like me for a second, like I found out through a Reset Era thread that I got laid off.
Yeah. Oh man, that's so like, brutal.
You were abroad, right?
Yeah, I was in Tokyo, and the time difference obviously was I was asleep. So I woke up and I found I got a text on my phone from my partner Rebecca, who was at a Ubisoft event at the time, saying, "Hey, I'm so sorry. Please call me if you need to talk."
Oh man.
And I didn't know what that meant at all. So I start like, because I've been walking in Tokyo, I'm like, I'm just going to take a bath and like my legs hurt. I'm going to soak in the bath for a bit. And as I was like letting the bath water run, it's like, huh, why is there a thread on Recent Era saying their layoffs of Fanbyte? And I like scroll through there and I see a tweet from my colleague Merrick Kay saying, oh, we just lost our news editor. And like, I've been through the layoff circuit a couple of times. This was a bad way to do it, where they just like other people knew before I did.
It's unbelievable.
And yeah, it's so I've been thinking about this for a bit of what's happening to games media right now. I was thinking about this before all this stuff happened, but it has been on my mind obviously the last couple of weeks for sure. And I think what most companies want to do now is they want to build this I guess like a framework of a site and then only pay like 3 or 4 people actual living salaries to do it. Mm-hmm. And then fill it up with freelancers who do like, I'm not going to say like bad guides, but there are sites that do bad guides, and like they want guides that like will be on Google and that will get those clicks and make money that way. And then that's it. They don't want to worry about paying anyone a market rate salary or anything like that. Yeah. And I don't think people realize outside the gaming journalism like bubble that there is kind of a war for the soul of what that good gaming journalism is right now, because there are sites that are willing to go, we want to become better, bigger, and pay our people well. And there are sites that are going, oh, we don't want any of that. We don't want anything that looks like paying people well. And like when I look at G4, which was paying people very well, from what I have seen of that, and was, I think they're paying people, or not, they were paying into their studio a little too much. They were paying I saw their studio space. Like, it was very impressive. It was like millions of dollars being poured into that thing. And I don't think the executives thought about, okay, what does the day 2 story of this look like? What does the week 2, the month 12 story look like? And they seemingly just thought, if we just turn on G4 again, then people will come, right? And I think there is absolutely an argument that good products will bring in an audience. But everyone wants that in year 1 or year 2, and I don't think that's ever like likely or possible. And basically, my entreatment to the audience or whoever is listening is, if you like good game journalism, if you hate the fact that when you click on Google for a question about a game and it says like, it just repeats your question 10 times for the first 5 paragraphs, then like, you should support good game journalism. It's just very hard to make that argument when no one's ever, like, the corporations that need to put in that, initial investment, like, aren't giving it time to thrive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's particularly stark. The same week that we saw our friends over at Kinda Funny debut their new studio, and they seem to be doing a lot of things very, very right over there. I mean, obviously that's a different model, right? That's Patreon funded and direct to an audience. But unfortunately, that's kind of where a lot of these folks are having to turn. You know, us included. We're just got done talking about our Patreon in the intro to this podcast. You have contextualized this, I think, very well, and I don't mean to contradict any of that, because I think all of the points that you've made are very valid. But I think layered on top of that is also that G4 as an idea feels a bit outdated, right? Yeah. It's an odd thing to try to create that old model now, because folks like Kinda Funny and so many others are doing it very much tailor-made for what works now. We have lots of friends over there. You know, Adam is a great friend of the show. We have lots of friends that were working at G4, and it makes me sad that any of them are out of an opportunity and out of work. But I also, I don't know. They were spending a lot of money. They were spending a lot of money. Yeah. And I don't know if that money was represented on screen. I mean, I didn't watch a ton of it, so I can't even really judge. But, there's reports now on Twitter. Who knows what you can believe? But there are reports that they were paying, some influencers like $35,000 to $40,000 a day. Their day rates were $35,000 to $40,000 just to make an appearance. And that makes me think I gotta raise my day rate.
I mean, it is unsustainable what they were like, how they were trying to do that. And I understand why they were doing that, because they were trying to emulate G4. They were trying to make like the play for this is there's streamers and there's like the Kinda Funnies and the Giant Bomb, stuff like that. What if we did all this with like an actual like budget and studio, but
TV.
Yeah. But it doesn't, there's only so long you can do that without trying to figure out, okay, now what's the long-term plan for this? And I think the talent there is incredible. I think the executive team did not do them well or did not serve them right by not having a long-term plan. And it seems like just before the 12-month mark, they were just like, okay, there was no plan. We're not making any money. We're done. And they deserve to have that on like from day one, they deserve to have that plan in place, like on a office whiteboard somewhere in that thing saying, this is what we're doing. This is what month 11, 12, 13 look like. And yeah. they were screwed in so many ways, but they were especially screwed by the fact that they're the money people are so short-sighted with this when it comes to this stuff that I don't think the casual audience really understands the extent to which good game content is always going to be on some kind of bubble. It's just a matter of like, are we talking about a personal bubble or like a corporate bubble or what? But it's always just like check to check for a lot of these outlets and sites.
Yeah. Christian, you and I were part of a company that spent a lot of money and then laid us off. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, well, I'll avoid those specifics also because of contractual obligations. But if you listen to the show enough, it's not hard to generalize many of those specifics. I think this problem, I fear, is larger than just the games industry. Much like maybe before with Gamergate, perhaps the games industry is the canary in the coal mine in some regard, where I think this problem is a larger media problem in the idea of media being, or journalism, you know, however you want it, not media in terms of all broad entertainment, but kind of reporting and substantive news and information being a for-profit business skews what type of coverage you're going to get and what types of things you're going to have. There's an old Louis C.K. bit, who I know Louis has rightfully fallen out of favor, but he had an old bit where he talked about how we live in a click-based economy. And this was, you know, I think he did it like 2008, 2006, like a long time ago, and it felt very like ahead of its time. And, you know, Imran talked about the idea of these awful Google, these articles that you get through SEO search. And it's, when does Gotham Knights come out is the question that you're asking about Gotham Knights' release date. The release date of Gotham Knights has been decided by publisher Warner Brothers about the game Gotham Knights. And it's real. And you're just like, oh, my God. And it's this chase to be that Google hit. And I think you see that in a lot of other types of content as well. And there's I talked about the show probably numerous times on this, but another podcast, 99% Invisible, which I love, with Roman Mars. And there's an episode called Search and Ye Might Find. And it talks about kind of the failures of search in many ways. And part of it is how Google, you know, initially created this really great search algorithm. And then as it became a business, it's purposefully wrong. Like it has to, you know, it has to surface not necessarily the correct search, but the advertised search or the algorithm search. And then the companies are going to try to beat the algorithms that they, you know, get shown, because that's how they make their money, is off the click and the ad they serve. And it's this kind of cat and mouse game on top of the layer of, you know, Google also trying to make its money. And man, if these past few months haven't shown the havoc that it can bring to games media, if nothing else, I think is telling of a scary world. As I saw, I think it was on our Discord is where I first saw it, Jeff, but I think you tweeted it out as well, like the AI image renderings of like your face in a whole bunch of cool pictures. Yeah. So like we're in a world of like AI can do podcasts between Joe Rogan and dead people, generate any artistic version of an awesome headshot of anybody, write plays, deep fake videos, and also we're all chasing the Google algorithm to make sure our stuff is seen.
Yeah.
And I don't know like what our children are going to do for a reliable source. It's going to go back to, you know, prehistoric era of like, if they didn't see it with their own two eyes and feel it with their own two hands, I mean, really see it in real time, it's probably not real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild how much like culture has changed. Like I'm 36 years old. In my life, since the internet became a major thing, it has changed dramatically in the last like 25 years. And oh, yeah. I remember the life before the internet. I remember the olden times, but like I think about just things went from I've made a GeoCities page that says Sephiroth is cool to like I've made a Twitter account that is like has to read certain news so that the account doesn't get an algorithm based on what I want and start subscribing to people that like I don't want it to subscribe to, because everything is always watching us and everyone's always trying to get me to pay for something.
Yeah.
And I cannot believe, like, when you really sit down and think about it, just even 10, 15 years from now, how different it's going to be. And like, one day maybe I'll have kids and I'm going to have to like keep up on not just the way my life is changing, but the way their life is changing around them. And I don't know how any parent does it now. I don't know how any parent is going to do it in the future.
Well, I can't recommend that. I don't want to give you life advice, but children, can't recommend it for that and many other reasons. But the thing you guys are talking about right now absolutely relates to the story that we're talking about, because it literally is a thing that was big 20 years ago, you know, and they're trying to recreate it now. And I think all the reasons and more that we're talking about is an example of why it's difficult to reboot that kind of stuff. You know, G4 it was a thing, and maybe it could be a thing again, but it felt like just trying to do G4 Redux, you know, wasn't quite enough. And I don't know if that's the extent to what they were doing, but I think it really does speak to how much has changed over the interim when G4 wasn't around. But, yeah, you know, G4 was big in 2005, 2006, 2004. It's like the world has changed quite a lot in that time.
The world has changed dramatically since 2020. And like the idea of let's get a studio together of people is like very cool in on paper. But it feels like, why don't we give you guys some Elgato stuff and we run a stream network through our homes, would have been the more like logistical play.
Yeah. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Well, I think you're going to choose what I honestly think is probably the biggest story of the week. So I'm going to leave that to you, my friend. And what I want to talk about is also a very big story, but perhaps not our typical content for this show. Is the stuff that came out of Minecraft Live 2022. Minecraft is still the game that will not quit.
My son is going to a Minecraft camp starting tomorrow morning. So yeah, not quitting.
No, yeah, definitely. Yeah, not only is it making tons of money for Microsoft, tons of other people are making tons of money off of it as well. you know, like camp or streamers, whatever, right? And so in the kind of the annual showcase, I'm trying to think if they've missed one. I don't know, honestly. And I'll just say usual showcase. They talk about big updates and things like that. And this year, I think there are two big ones to kind of highlight. And I'll start with the perhaps lesser one, because I think it's really important as well. In the new update coming in expected early 2023, it doesn't have a name yet, but they're going to add 7 new default skins, which for a game that launched with, I believe, 1 and then expanded to 2. I love seeing stuff like this where more players can see more of themselves in what the game presents as default. And they're really trying to have the game lean more into self-expression with those skins. And then also adding additions for building into the world, hanging signs, which has been requested for a long time, as well as rafts. And then I think bamboo wood, which I think bamboo had been in the game, but not as a wood set. But I think it's really important to see Sims. We've talked about those updates that have come out in Sims 4, Sims 3, whatever the Sims is, that is still the same Sims, but gets great updates over the years. Bringing this diversity as a default set is really big and really important. And then the bigger perhaps thing is a new action strategy game where Minecraft Legends, I think is what it's called, right?
They announced that earlier this year, right? Summer Games Fest?
Is that where it was first shown? I feel like I forget if that's when it was first shown or not, but like they talked about how you can ride around and fight, and they kind of showed a lengthy gameplay demonstration. So maybe
I think it was just a trailer.
Launch window. Okay, so just a CGI trailer. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're further expanding this world of Minecraft in terms of bringing other types of games. And I don't know. I know we talked about, what was the other Minecraft Dungeons before. And that didn't quite click for me the way I thought it would, as like this co-op romp. I'm a mess. But Minecraft Legends seems interesting. I think it's something that could be a very fun family game in my household. I'm curious if either of you, you know, watched any of Minecraft Live 2022 or if any of this gets you excited.
Just a note, that Minecraft Legends announced trailer was posted in June. So I think it was, Summer Games.
Yeah.
Almost 10 million views of the official announcement trailer. So, you know, a lot of folks checking it out. But Imran, what do you say about some of these Minecraft Live developments?
I like the idea of Mojang making like different kinds of games. Like, obviously, they're going to put the Minecraft skin on it. Like, if you don't put the Minecraft skin on it, you're probably doing yourself a disservice, because that is the biggest IP, I think, or one of the biggest IPs in the world. So it makes sense they would call like anything they're going to do Minecraft something. But I think it's like the same thing I like that Riot's doing, of taking these other games and genres, maybe outsourcing them, maybe not, maybe building them internally, and just going, okay, here's different stuff that, even if you don't like our main game, this might get you into the IP a little bit, because that does work. It does get people more interested. Like, there are people who probably went from Mario Kart to Mario, or, you know, think like different genres like that. I saw the Minecraft Legends stuff, and I was like, this looks interesting. I'm actually interested to play this. I don't know that it will. Minecraft is my, I check it out every 2 years kind of game. And the last time I checked it out was the ray tracing stuff, which is admittedly extremely cool.
It is.
But I want to kind of play Minecraft Legends just because it is a different thing on Minecraft. And I might be done personally with like Minecraft. I don't ever see myself going back to play it for a long period of time, but I still like this. I still like looking at the thing and like hearing the sounds Minecraft makes. So anything that like kind of brings it into that fold where something is more interesting for me, then I'm on board.
Yeah.
That's what I think is interesting. Oh, go ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
I was going to say my 6-year-old is constantly disappointed at how little I know about Minecraft. I've dabbled, but I didn't get deep into Minecraft. And my only, this sounds like old dad comment, but only because that's what I am. The only bummer to me about sort of broadening the Minecraft IP into these other games, which has already happened and will continue to happen. I mean, there was like a Telltale, you know, adventure mm-hmm. series. There's mm-hmm. that other, isometric one that was kind of fun for a little while. But the bummer is that what I think is central and actually laudable about the Minecraft franchise is that it's a game about creativity. Right. And I think that a lot of these other genres that use Minecraft as an IP strip that out, right? They're not about that. They're more conventional video games. And that's fine, right? You can still love the IP and you know, have great game experiences. But I just love the fact that this thing that has become so ubiquitous for really young kids, you know, on backpacks, and you know, my kid is like, they get to on Thursdays at his elementary school, he's in first grade, and they get to go to the library and pick out books to bring home. And he's frequently brought home Minecraft books. And it's all about, you know, encyclopedic kind of exploration of what does what, and what do you need to hear? And this, you know, get this at this place and, you know, combine it with that. All of that creative side. And I don't want the IP to lose that. And I don't think it ever really will, because Minecraft is still Minecraft fundamentally, but that's my only nit, yeah, I think, with all of this.
Yeah, I feel like Legends definitely does seem, you know, in that latter camp where they've said it's story based. I think they're adding voicing to characters that had never had it before. But it also seems thematically, in terms of the UI, closer to Minecraft proper than Dungeons was. And it kind of, the overworld also looks much more like Dungeons looked Minecrafty, certainly. But I think the way Legends looks and feels could be, you know, perhaps more of that gateway gateway drug. But I look at it kind of the same way I look at Lego, where you can get the, you know, the bin of Lego bricks and all the different colors and build whatever you want. And you can also buy the Batmobile kit, you know, that comes with instructions and that, build that. And then when you're done with it, do something else. And I think these expansions of the IP don't take away from that core building version of the game, but I think work to be the movie of Batman while the comic book still exists. To use another Batman example.
Or the movie of Lego Batman.
I mean, the lady who does my taxes once emailed me like middle of the night saying, "Hey, I know you work in video games. Can you recommend any Minecraft books to me?" Because she wanted to get closer to her grandchild who is like obsessed with Minecraft. And like, that's a thing that when I talk to small children and they hear, "Oh, you work in video games? Do you know a lot about Minecraft?" And I'm always like, "Not really. I know a little bit." Like, "Oh, then what could you possibly be doing if you don't know a lot about Minecraft?"
Yeah, this is my son's perspective on me. Yes.
Yeah. And like, it's, I think that is the basis from which they should expand Minecraft. They should go, "We have fundamentally one of the strongest IPs in the world. Let's, in little fits and starts, let's expand that out and try what else people might be interested in." Because who knows? Like, maybe the core Minecraft audience will be on board with the Diablo. Maybe only some of them will. But if like enough of them do that it's worth trying, then go ahead and try it. Try it with different, maybe there should be a JRPG Minecraft. Maybe there should be like all this other stuff. Like, Minecraft is very creative forward, but maybe they should expand it out into a like the kind of Roblox thing where they can actually make games. Ideally better and safer than Roblox, but you know, that idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't fundamentally have any problem with that, and I will, I'm sure, learn more and more as my son continues to get into that world. But yeah, I feel oddly disconnected to Minecraft. It just sort of happened at a time when I wasn't, you know, I was a little past it, and it, you know, it has taken over the world, sort of, you know, without me paying much attention to it.
Yeah,
but it is interesting to see how Microsoft is taking it.
I get emails every couple of months from Microsoft saying, "Hey, your Minecraft Java edition is about to expire. We're not going to support that anymore." I'm like, "Oh yeah, I did start playing it in like 2000, like whatever."
Yeah, me too. It was like 10 whatever. Bucks
yeah.
at that time, right? For the Java edition. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I think is, I guess my last thought on this is, I think as a corporate shepherd, as we talked about some other, you know, corporations doing wrong in terms of how layoffs go, I think Microsoft has been a pretty dang good steward for the Minecraft brand, all things considered. And maybe there are some hardcore people that will argue against that, but I think they expanded the core, the IP, while also developing and keeping pure the main game, but adding improvements to it as well, not forgetting it. And haven't made like, you know, it's not like Halo Minecraft, you know, or something just totally that doesn't fit. And I think they've done a really good job in terms of being a big billion-dollar company that bought this very successful thing, of keeping it successful, but also clearly looking to make even more money from the brand.
Yeah, it's very easy to be evil and popular with a good children's thing. And thus far, they've managed to be like popular, profitable, and not evil. Like, who knows how long that will last? Maybe forever. Maybe like it will, like maybe by next E3 they will have followed Roblox in the bad direction. But at least so far, they seem to at least know what they're doing here.
Well, speaking of big evil corporations, my story of the week is the Meta Connect that happened this week. In which Meta made a bunch of interesting announcements from my perspective about VR and the metaverse that they're attempting to build, including announcing brand new tech, the Meta Quest Pro VR headset, which has been really one of the worst kept secrets for a long time. We knew that that Meta was going to be putting out a pro version of the Quest. What we did not know was that it was going to cost $1,500, which is over triple what the Meta Quest two cost, even after their price increase, which was pretty surprising. And I'll be honest, folks, I know I have painted myself as a VR headset collector of sorts I'm a sucker for this tech. I love VR. I'm excited about it. So I am not surprised how many of you reached out and said, hey, Jeff, did you get your pre-order in on Meta Quest Pro headset? And you know what? When I saw the announcement, I was not watching Kinect. I just saw on Twitter they announced the Pro. I knew that the Pro was coming. I literally went to the website to pre-order it, only to see that it was $1,500. And even then, I was like, wow, am I splurging for this? If it's $1,500, more than triple the Quest 2 price, it's going to clearly be more than triple as powerful as the Quest 2, right? Well, not so much. This is why I'm not pre-ordering the Pro headset, although I would love to get my face on with it. I would love to try it to get it, to get my own subjective view of what its improvements are. I've been watching lots of people who have had a chance to try it out on YouTube and reading articles. And it really does seem like it's an incremental increase, which is a surprising, noting the price, a lot of comfortability improvements. The new pancake lenses are supposed to be much more effective and a big step up. But the big thing for me is resolution, and the resolution does not seem to be a huge increase. It's about a 10% increase over Quest 2. It does have a larger color gamut and more contrast. They say the clarity in the headset is marked and noticeable, but it just doesn't seem to be $1,500 upgrade worthy for me. It does look cool. I think it's got the balance of the weight with the battery on the back of the head strap, sort of balancing
your empty wallet in the front, so it's like, yeah, perfect.
I'm told it's got only an hour or two of battery life, which,
yep,
is pretty surprising for a standalone headset,
which I think is the same as the Quest 2. I have a Quest 1. I believe Quest 2 is like 2 hours, and if you really push it, less. What I find surprising about that for the Pro is that the Pro was also really pitched as like, this is how we biznaz now. Yeah. And I think people biznaz for more than an hour before needing to be plugged in. What was the charge time? 5 hours? You know, I guess maybe I shouldn't complain. It's a pretty good work day. Be like, yeah, well,
if the selling point is no meeting lasts longer than an hour, I am for it.
Yeah.
See you guys in 5 hours. Got to recharge.
In the future, no meetings are more than an hour. Live in the metaverse. I'm in. Let's do this.
The thing is, like, it feels like Meta has decided on their own that all work is going to take place in VR for some reason. I don't understand. Like, they seem to have come to this conclusion, and this is a good business move if you're 100% sure this is what's going to happen, but I don't think that's going to happen. Like, the argument is that 10 Meta headsets cost less than an office. So you don't, like, right. So if everyone's just at home and they're meeting in a virtual office, but you know what costs less than an office and a Meta headset? Zoom. Or Skype, yeah. Or a phone call. Like, all of those things are things that we use right now. Like, this feels like a thing that someone started in March 2020 and was like, if we get this out next month, this is going to be huge. And now it's been 2 years. And they've not done a great job of saying what their idea and their vision for VR in the workplace, or honestly, even for games, is yet. And they're rapidly running out of road to do so, because they keep announcing these things that, let's say you are someone who does like the idea of working in VR. That's perfectly fine. That's valid. I think it's an interesting technology. I think if you wanted to pursue that, you'd probably get something out of it. But if you are that person, you're probably not someone who's like been keeping up on all this, like, bit by bit. You're not someone who is looking interested in the Quest Pro and the Quest 2, or you're someone who owns a business and are think like, oh, this is called Quest Pro, so I need this for the work one. But you look at that price tag and go, actually, no, I'm probably not going to do this. It's easier and cheaper to just do it the way that we've always done it, or like the ways that are currently working. So they, alongside this, instead of just saying, yeah, this is for enterprise, they just said, this is why this works for enterprise. This is why it's more than just like bad Second Life. And they're not doing that well at all. It's one thing to open yourself up to mockery. It's another to just like welcome it the way this thing is.
Yeah. I can't argue with any of that. I mean, I honestly, I'm rooting for VR. I'm not necessarily rooting for Meta or Facebook, but I'm rooting for VR, and I don't know who this product is for. You know, at half this price, $750, I would still be like, wow, that's steep for what is an incremental upgrade to your $400 product. It's strange. And that's at half of what it's actually priced at.
Yeah.
So I don't know who this is for. And I think you make a great argument, Imran, for the enterprise side. I mean, I think there are certain applications, and those are the ones you often see in these, you know, in the future, we'll all be working VR. And it's like, you know, shared, I don't know, engineering design or something where you can walk around it and manipulate it, or some sort of medical field where you're able to, you know, feel like you're sort of in the operating room. But again, like, I don't want my headset to run out of battery in the middle of one of those meetings. I just don't know who this product is for and who they expect to sell $1,500 headsets to. I don't know. And, you know, clearly not me, who is ready to buy VR headsets and wants to play more VR games, because this is not even targeted as particularly a gaming piece of hardware.
Yeah.
Although there were some game announcements alongside this at Meta Connect, not anything really to write home about, but there is a game that I'm very excited is coming to Quest, and that is Iron Man VR, which I think had been trapped. I think it's the same game as the one that came out.
They bought Camouflage, so they bought the company that made it and are porting it to.
Yeah, and I'm hoping they do some improvements, because I played it on. I played it on PSVR, and it just was trapped in some really outdated hardware at that point. And but it had some just great ideas, and I hope they're giving Camouflage some cash to kind of iterate a bit and make it a little bit even more robust than it was, because you know the flying stuff is great, the combat is really cool, but it had sort of this. Really flimsy, you know, you're a Tony Stark's house layer that just didn't really feel very good at all. And I'm hoping maybe they get to flesh it out a bit more. And when it is released on Quest, I really want to play it. I hope it's a lot better.
I did a couple of preview sessions for it. And like the main problem I always had with it was the flying section. I'm turning around and I'm always worried I'm going to trip on a wire, because you just had those big wires coming at the back of the headset.
Yeah.
That now we don't, with the Quest 2, we do not have to worry about that. It should, in theory, that one thing should make for a better game. But we'll see. Maybe once like the novelty of it like wears off, then I'm not, maybe like some design flaws will be more apparent. But like they're buying pretty much every studio that has at some point or another committed to VR. Mm. So maybe this is just like, now that they know how to port to Quest, they can make something, probably not Iron Man again, but something iterative that does knock it out of the park.
And that, I mean, honestly, if you've got Meta money, that's how I want you to spend it, is make software. I mean, it's a bummer that the software comes and it seems to be locked, you know, in this walled garden of Quest products. I would love for it to be on PC VR and any other, you know, and PS VR 2 or whatever. I would love it to not feel like, oh, you have to have a Meta product in order to play these games, but I do want somebody investing in software, because the software has really dried up quite a bit from when VR was first hitting the scene, and that's what's going to get people to want to purchase it.
I do think that with these acquisitions, they are probably seeding the what AAA VR purports to be to Sony. They're probably saying, like, if you want the Resident Evil Villages or the major high-end VR games, that's probably going to be on PSVR 2. I think where Oculus is going to sit is, especially with Camouflage, Twisted Pixel, and Armature, lower-end stuff, like games that are cheaper to make and cheaper to buy. I don't think we're going to get anything that's like $60 on the Oculus store ever, but I think we're going to start seeing more stuff that is like a Beat Saber, stuff that is simple in concept and easy to explain, and you just put on a headset and do it. I don't think they're going to go for the larger experiences from here on out. That said, they did buy Sanzaru. Sanzaru's last game was Asgard's Wrath. Yeah, because I remember when I wrote the reveal for that game.
That game's awesome.
Yeah. It's a very good game, and it is the kind of thing of we want a bigger VR title. They've not said or announced anything since then. So maybe they are working on one of those AAA games, and maybe that is like the strategy of mostly small things and then a couple of big things here and there.
I think that's all accurate, and it bums me out a bit, but I think it is accurate.
Hard part is just meta, right? Like
anecdotally
and stuff, it's like they need this to work because they need their own hardware. They need their own platform. They're tired of being beholden to not being allowed to track everything about everyone because Apple says, hey, what you're doing, we think is evil. We think our customers will prefer us to not let you do what you're doing. And we can actually use that as a pro for our device. So we're going to turn that off. And they see billions of dollars of revenue lost. And Google's also like, yeah, Apple made a pretty good play with that. We're also going to stop you from doing all of this tracking that your customers didn't know you were doing. And Meta's stock takes another hit. And it's like, well, if we own the thing, no one can control what we're doing but us. If we own the thing, we don't have to tell anyone what we're doing. There's no oversight into all of the stuff we do or collect or sell or give to other parties to use however they want. And to me, that makes sense as why they're putting so much stock into this. They need to own the whole kit and caboodle to run their business unfettered. And to me, that is the scariest part of it. Knowing what these VR headsets can do in terms of understanding data about you, and then knowing the company that is owning that data. And I'm not saying that they are alone. You know, Amazon trying to purchase iRobot, the makers of Roomba, also very scary for many of the same reasons, I think. But I just don't see an altruistic side of Meta in terms of why they want to get into VR and to create the metaverse. And I think the game that they would have to make would have to be really, really good to have me personally be remotely interested in what they're putting out.
I don't know what would make people want to start doing VR for work. Like, I don't know what would change society. It can't be a good thing. We're talking about like another pandemic level thing that would get people to go, okay, we're going to stay home, but I miss interacting with people. What if we approximated it somehow? And I don't know what would get people to move on from Zoom or even just Slack to want to do this. But they seem convinced. Meta seems convinced that's going to happen. And in a way that's like, honestly, a little worrying of like, what do you guys know? What do you think is going to happen?
I mean, to give them the benefit of the doubt, I think it's more that they're thinking that the experience would be so compelling. Not that we're going to be slammed in a,
I mean, you know, if they
some
think
sort of
that
horrible global catastrophe,
if they think that, they're probably betting on a wrong horse here. Like, this
it's wrong until it isn't, right? Because
at the moment,
read any science fiction book in the last 30 years and somebody's in postulating that, you know, we're all going to have these incredible experiences that are in a virtual space. I think that's the idea of a metaverse. That's why you coin your company Meta and talk about a metaverse, is that you're trying to get to a place where, you know, there's this compelling virtual space that is shared that we all go to. It's the Ready Player One thing. You know, I don't think that is inherently, an unrealistic goal. I think that it's a science fiction goal now. It's certainly not what they've created, but I think that's genuinely what they want to make, is that there's this other thing that hasn't happened yet, but it takes a company with the resources of a Facebook to make it happen. And not to discount any of the genuine concerns you guys have, which I think are valid, but I do think there is a pie in the sky kind of idealistic view of this that isn't cynical. You can attribute that to Zuckerberg as much or as little as you like, but I think that's the notion, right? The notion is make something that is incredible and takes the planet somewhere it never has gone before.
I think you're correct in that there is a time in the history of everything that works when it didn't, but they have to be willing to lose a ton of money on the things like the Meta Quest Pro. like continue to lose money. There can't
They're
be anyone
bill in on this. The $10 billion. I mean, the thing, you can say a lot of things negative about Zuckerberg, and I am totally in agreement with that. But what you can't say is the dude doesn't make crazy bets, because he has literally risked the entire future of this company on this idea. And that there's a lot of reasons that I don't respect the guy, but I do respect him for that, because I think that's an incredibly bold and risky move that could totally tank what is one of the most, you know, profitable companies in the history of mankind. And it's all because he's like, thinks this is the way forward. And I think that's right.
They also didn't have another product. They haven't had another product. Well, all they've done is bought other people's products that they saw as competitors, some just to shelve. I mean, this isn't the, you know, the Mark product, but
there's a lot of companies that just hold on to the product that's made them money and ride it into the ground.
I've never heard of that once, Jeff. From personal experience, I've never been.
I'm just saying,
It's
a pretty bold thing to say. Hey, we're going to lose literally tens of billions every year to try to make this, just try to will this thing into existence.
Okay, but the question is, like, when does that wheel turn for them? Do they think the Meta Quest Pro is going to make a profit, or not a profit? Is it going to be like to justify the work done so far? And if the answer is no, then what are we waiting for? Are we the experiments? Are we the gerbils in this one? Or like, when is the thing going to come that actually does make good on what they're promising? And I'm not convinced they know yet.
I think that's probably accurate. Yeah, it's as I said, I don't know who this product is for. And I don't know if they know.
Not us amateurs. Oh, it's for pros.
The PlayStation 4 Pro ruined the word pro for anything. Like, because like, if you can name a gaming console the pro version, then like, what does it mean anymore?
Right. I'm a pro phone user. This is my first time being, I've never been a pro phone user, but I got called up after numerous years in the minors, and now I'm a pro phone user, and it feels good. You know?
I was
a pro Horizon Zero Dawn player, in that I played it in checkerboard 4K, as the professionals do.
All right, on that note, let's move on. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Squarespace. Squarespace, of course, has been a sponsor since we started this here DLC podcast, and I am happy to continue to talk about Squarespace. I've used it for well over a decade. JeffCanada.com was built on Squarespace. And I recommend it to friends and family whenever they say, I need to build a website. Jeff, I need to build a website. Tell me how you use websites. I say, yes, Squarespace. Squarespace is the place to build a website. And now, if you have any kind of business online, Squarespace is your all-in-one platform for building a brand and growing a business online. It helps you stand out. They, of course, have always been great with beautiful websites, beautiful, striking, unique, interesting websites that engage with your audience. And now they're doubling down on helping you sell things, products, content you create, even your time. They have all sorts of really great tools at Squarespace to help you capitalize on the things that will help grow your business, including member areas where you can monetize content and expertise in a way that fits your brand. You can unlock revenue streams for your business and free up time in your schedule by selling access to gated content or videos, online courses, newsletters. And if you want to make videos, they have a Squarespace Video Studio app that helps you make and share engaging videos to tell your story and grow your audience and drive sales. It's all built in. It's all everything you need, all right there for you at Squarespace. If you want to have an online store, it's easy. Just drag and drop. It's just a module that turns your website into an online store, whether you sell physical or digital products. They have the tools that you need to start selling online easily. Plus, everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. You don't need to worry about anything. You don't have to upgrade anything or patch anything. They've got analytics that help you grow your business in real time with insights. It's everything you need. Why don't you check it out? Squarespace.com/Jeff Sent Me is the place to go to get a free trial. And then when you're ready to launch your website, you can use our offer code, which is Jeff Sent Me, J-E-F-F-S-E-N-T-M-E, all one word, and you'll save yourself 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Great place to buy domains. I've used the front end at Squarespace to buy my domains for a long time now, and man, it's so cool. It's so slick. Check it out. Squarespace.com/Jeff sent me, and then the promo code Jeff sent me to save yourself 10% off. All right, let's talk about the games that we have been playing in a segment we call the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us on the playlist. Imran, I'm very excited to talk about some of the games that you have been playing. In particular, I'd like to start with that Street Fighter VI beta, if you're cool with that. I am. Yeah. I've read a lot of things. I've seen some real wacky creative fighters. And I'm very curious what your time with the Street Fighter VI beta has been like.
So I've basically at every event over the last like 6 months, I have been playing Street Fighter VI at each one because Capcom is like, hey, do you want to like try this new build? And every time I'm like, yes. Because I keep being surprised that I loved Street Fighter IV. Street Fighter IV was an amazing game. It was really what got me into fighting games. I did not like Street Fighter V. I did not expect to like VI. VI is so good, I genuinely feel like it could make a real run at Game of the Year, a thing wow. I don't think most fighting games are really capable of, usually, because just that's just not the kind of game that does. But VI feels amazing, and they've nailed the style of it so well that I think, like, one issue I had with five especially, but this has always been an issue with Capcom in this series, is that they build a really good fighting engine and then just kind of leave it be in terms of presentation, in terms of extra content, in terms of all that. This is the time I feel like they've realized we can't do that anymore. If we want to make this hit, it needs to have that like compelling single player mode. It needs to have the compelling like gameplay. It needs to have a presentation that every time you look at it, you go, wow, this looks slick as hell. And I think that's kind of where, like, even the little bits of Street Fighter VI, even a little bits of the single player mode we've seen, that's them going, we've learned our lessons. We want to make this the game that Street Fighter fans have been waiting for. And I every time I touch that game, every time I pick it up and I'm like, I want to try this new character, the new character immediately feels good. It feels natural to play. And I feel like I feel like this is a game that I could play and lose at constantly and still feel I'm getting better and still enjoy myself.
That's awesome. I'm so excited for this. I've read a number of people really praising the fighting trainer, which historically has been a really tough thing to get right in fighting games. Have you had any time to play with that?
So like in the beta itself, there's nothing really besides going up through the lobby and then like fighting people in an arcade style thing. But what they did tell me when I interviewed the producer and the director at TGS, they said the main thing they're building that single player mode for is to teach people how to enjoy Street Fighter, not just how to get good at it. Cause that is an important distinction that getting good at the game, yeah, you can Google, yeah, you can like watch videos, you can do what I did and ask IDOM, one of the best Street Fighter players in the world, to teach you how to play Street Fighter. But like that will make you maybe learn, like memorize some tactics, but unless you're enjoying the game, you'll never be great at it.
Right.
And I think teaching people how to get like learn the game is one thing, but teaching people how to like learn how to love it is the other. And I think I've not tried it to know whether they're successful or not, but that they're at least attempting to do that, I think, is the right call.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a laudable goal. I love that that's their take on it. Man, I'm very excited, and I can't wait to get my hands on it myself. Hearing you compare it favorably to Street Fighter IV is really exciting. Street Fighter VI, I don't know, when is it slated to come out? Is it coming out the end of the year?
No, they don't have a date for it yet. It's almost certainly going to be 2023. Right. I imagine it is not going to come out before Resident Evil, which is March. Right. So I would guess early summer, late spring.
Well, I guess I'll have to wait. Sounds awesome, though. And you've also got early hands-on with another game that I'm eagerly anticipating. Mario Rabbids Sparks of Hope.
That I did indeed. Yeah, Ubisoft had sent me code for that game, so it's an in progress review because I've not actually finished it, but I know how I feel about that game, and I think that game is quite good.
Yeah, how, How does it compare to the first game? It seems like they have really expanded the scope and mechanics of the game to add a lot more exploration and a lot more other stuff to do rather than just sort of being a, you know, XCOM with a Mario skin.
Yeah, like the first game, I liked that game a lot, but you're right. Between battles, there was just not a lot to do. You just walked forward, essentially, and maybe solved some puzzles if you wanted some rewards, or just kept going to the next battle, or and like upgrade your stuff and blah, blah, blah. It was not... It was serviceable, but in no way compelling. This one, it feels more like a Mario RPG kind of thing. You go to a world, biome, whatever you want to call it, and there's like side quests, there's exploration, there's NPCs that are around, there's stores. It's not like, it is not a massive JRPG kind of thing. It's not a giant world that you can like, that you're going to get lost in, but it is, it's a expanded thing to the Kingdom Battles initial between battle section, where they're like rabbits that are around saying, hey, these bombs are ruining my vacation, can you kill 3 bombs? Not the most compelling quest design, but it's better than, you know, can you push all these blocks around. A lot of it, most of the quests you'll do are in just like going into a battle and solving that battle, and then you're done with the quest, and then like you've saved some toads or whatever. So it's not, I would not call it like incredibly inventive. In fact, it gets a little repetitive at some point, but it is very clearly expanded on the previous game, and they're like trying to do more with it. It's also just fun to run around as Mario and hear him say stuff as you're like running through like an ice world or whatever.
Yeah, it's like hanging out with Chris Pratt.
I'm gonna say, Jeff, what would he say? What would Mario say as he ran to an ice world? Maybe just like, say,
this looks like the Mushroom Kingdom.
Except that they're like,
nailed it.
Hey, this looks like the Mushroom Kingdom. I can understand why you
got the job. I can't pick either of you now. You both sound perfect.
I can understand why you couldn't like get it accurately, because as Chris Pratt said, we have never heard anything like it before.
Never.
It is completely new to the world.
Shocking. Yeah. Oh man, I'm so excited for that game. I loved the first one. I loved it so much.
It took a little while for it to warm up again, because it starts off, I think. It doesn't start off great, because it puts you in a world that is rainy and muddy, and I'm like, is this game look bad, or is the Switch old, or what? But by the time you finish it, it is like sunshine and looks nice again. And also, they really slow the rollout of various features. Like, you don't get your third-party member till the end of the first world. Like, oh, wow. Or third-party member you can use in battle. So it feels like less complicated, less interesting. But by the end, or middle of the second world, I'd say, you start understanding why they make all these like small little what feel like arbitrary changes. Like in this game, you can't move after you shoot, but you can move, or you can consistently keep going back and forth moving until you perform that action. So you can set up so many different things. Like I've specced Mario out now, so he is constantly like jumping on enemy heads, which means that I can now set up people to like move into space for Mario to jump on them, so he can like jump back on someone or jump on some enemies, jump back, shoot from the air, then come back to where he was, and then move those characters again so I can set up another team jump, or I can set up a new shot or whatever. The way this game has rolled out its small changes is very interesting and very compelling, because in the previous game, you were ranked on how many turns you took to finish the battle. Mm-hmm. And if you were, usually there was like a par limit, and usually you would hit par or below. But this one, there's no ranking. So it is basically telling you, sometimes you're not going to be aggressive in every single battle. Sometimes you need to like hunker down. Sometimes you need to get everyone in a good position so enemies come to you. And right. I think there's a lot more variety in the different puzzle boxes this game has, that is, again, another great expansion of Kingdom Battle, because they did sit down, they did think about, what did the first game not do well, and how do we improve on that? And I think they've mostly nailed that.
The problem I have is that Nintendo has not released a new Switch.
And yeah, you're gonna have that problem in spades with this game.
My son is like all about the Switch, and so if Daddy's gonna need the Switch, I don't want to buy a second old Switch. I want a new Switch to buy, and then I can hand him down my Switch, which is basically taking most of the time with anyway. He plays more of that thing than I ever did.
This is the problem I've run into, where my Switch fan has decided it's going to be extremely loud. So it, like, unless I were wearing headphones, it is noticeable. But I don't want to buy a new Switch.
Right.
Because, like, what if a new Switch comes out right after I buy this? Or, like, what if even if, like, there's a Tears of the Kingdom OLED, I want that instead of just, like, whatever else right now.
Yeah, exactly. There's gonna be some Tears of the Kingdom branded Switch.
I just want a vent that does not, or a fan that doesn't scream bloody murder at me.
I just want two Joy-Cons that work. That's all I care about.
I don't know if they'll ever fix that, but we'll see.
That's not a very ambitious goal, but it's a big goal in our house. What else have you been playing? What else is on your playlist?
In terms of recent stuff, real quick, every time I pick up my Steam Deck, it is to play Vampire Survivors. Even though I keep buying games for my Steam Deck, I just keep playing Vampire Survivors. So that's become a problem.
I understand that. I'm right there with you, man. It's a perfect Steam Deck game.
It is. It is actually because it's one of the few games that doesn't drain the battery like egregiously. Yeah. And like you pick it up for 5 minutes and you end up wasting 30 minutes. We were almost late to a thing today because I was playing Vampire Survivors. Splatoon 3, I'm still enjoying. I play that game with my partner, Rebecca, and we both get very mad by the end of every night because we're like, it can't be that we're bad. It's that everyone else is bad. It's that we keep getting matched up with bad people who are,
right.
We keep getting matched against the best players ever, obviously. So it's fun, but yeah, we get salty at the end of every match. Overwatch 2, I've been playing a little bit. I don't like that game, I don't think.
Oh, really? And you did like Overwatch 1.
I liked year one of Overwatch 1. I feel like I dropped off after that, so like maybe that game moved past me. But the thing that's been ringing in my head for the last like week or two playing Overwatch 2 is I kind of think Overwatch League ruined Overwatch. I kind of think they started designing a game for maybe it's a bigger audience, but it's an audience I'm not a part of. Right. I liked Overwatch 1, where it felt like everyone was taking this game exactly as seriously as I was, which was we go in, we win or we lose, whatever. But everyone like, I'm a Widowmaker. I want to go to that, like the area of the map that I like shooting from. And sometimes it works. Most of the time it works. And sometimes it doesn't, but whatever. But no one's going to get mad at me or yell at me. This game, like, as a tank, people were yelling at me that I wasn't doing enough DPS. As I couldn't get into my old positions because everyone's like, why are you there? That's not the ideal optimized position.
Yikes.
Like, I feel like as people took this game more seriously and as Blizzard started catering to those people more, the multiplayer creativity got drained from that game. It got like, it wasn't about finding out what works best for me as a player. It's about learning the optimized strats for my role and just doing that. And I can understand why some people do love that. I know that like winning is like what people do, like how they have fun in these games, but it's not for me. Like that's not what I care about deeply. Yeah. And I play Overwatch 2 and it's gone so far in that direction that it feels like it's just completely like it is. The friend I had in elementary school that became a jock in high school and is now like way too popular for me. And
is that
I don't even know if it's popular.
But yeah. Do you think that's a problem with the game's design, or do you think that's a problem with the community that the game has fostered?
I think it's a problem with the community, and then ends up being a problem with design because Blizzard is way too reactive to this community. I think the second you made role queue, like the second you made it so I have to decide before a match starts whether I want to be a support, a DPS, or a tank. Like that initially, like that immediately turns me off because it used to be that, oh, my friend wants to be Tracer, so I'm going to be a character that's fun to play alongside Tracer. And it's not that different really, but it's because it's one of those things that just feels in my day, of 2016, this was not exactly what this was like. And the other aspect is, I don't understand why this game is called Overwatch 2. I like legitimately just don't. The major difference I have noticed is that sometimes maps take place at the day when they used to take place at night, and vice versa. And that's not enough really to call this game Overwatch 2. It's not enough to get someone like me back in for sure. But it feels like maybe there is something they're just waiting in the wings with to roll out, like the PvE stuff that they announced first. Maybe that's the thing that justifies calling this Overwatch 2. But if that's the case, I don't know why this game is out. Surely it can't be because it was ready, because it's glitchy as hell. Like, I don't know if you've noticed, but they removed Bastion from all modes and Torbjorn from most.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been obviously very turbulent rollout of this game, with the, I guess they had a DDoS attack, and you couldn't log in for, you know, I downloaded it. I was all excited on day one. I was like, oh, I'm going to get, I'm 40,000th in queue, which I think was an erroneous reporting. It was just the game had completely borked from the DDoS attack, which, you know, is not their fault, but right. It just feels like this whole thing has been a bit of a disaster. And I mean, I think the two-ness of it is the free part, maybe, but maybe that's not enough to be a two.
I think what I am waiting for is when the Microsoft acquisition of Blizzard and Activision Blizzard finishes. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's just some like plan for Game Pass waiting in the wings. That is, hey, you have Game Pass, you play Overwatch 2, here's just half the Battle Pass, like done for you.
Yeah.
Like that's the only way I can really like, because the Battle Pass also way too grindy. It doesn't like, they've already started doing double XP for that stuff because it doesn't feel like it's in any way completable by a normal human being. And like, obviously the best stuff is at the end of it. So I personally came away from that, like, I want to say 3-4 hours of playing that game with a very sour taste in my mouth. And the only reason I played 3 or 4 hours was I kept going, there's gotta be some way for me to recapture that first year. And yeah. I just couldn't.
Mm, that's a bummer. Well, Christian, my understanding is that knowing is half the battle pass. Is that not?
Are you just doing a G.I. Joe deep cuts now for our audience?
That's all I care about. It's garnered a lot of response. So that's all I do
now. You are Overwatch 2. It's not. It's the community that dictates the design.
Christian, what is on your playlist this week?
Two games I can talk about now this week that hadn't been able to talk about prior to. I was provided a code by Ilphonic for Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed, which is their latest 4v1 multiplayer. You can play solo, but multiplayer game.
Everyone based against Spangler, right?
No, it's everyone trying to convince Bill Murray to not phone it in. He's actually not in this game. But it's, you know, it's the 4v1 asymmetric game that they have done several excellent ones already of based on other IPs you might be fond of. And what this game does right is reverence for the IP in a big, big way. It brings that Ghostbusters feeling to a video game. Ernie Hudson and Dan Aykroyd are back, Winston and Ray from the OG Ghostbusters. And there's not a complete, I think, but you know, cause it's a multiplayer game, but between sessions, games, rounds, there is story that happens and it's, you know, well voiced and well written performances by the folks in this game, including Dan Aykroyd and Ernie. It's not like, hey, welcome, here's this new character, yuck yucks. <You know? laughs> And then they walk away and yuck yucks is like, you're a Ghostbuster now. You know, it's not, it is not that. It is
really good yuck yucks though.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yuck yucks apparently didn't get the gig. They actually found out while they were in Australia, covering PAX Australia. Anyway, I'm trying to tie stories together. But it is covered in Ghostbustersness. You start in the fire station. Ecto-1 is there. You can't drive it, which is it could be fun to do, but a good driving game is hard to do. You get to explore the station and where you go into your upgrade area, you're tinkering, and it feels right. And the art direction for the game also really, really hits. Like it feels like Fortnite meets an updated version of the real Ghostbusters. If you all or our audience remembers that cartoon where they couldn't be called Ghostbusters because some other genius made a cartoon called Ghostbusters that wasn't Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
So the actual Ghostbusters had to be a cartoon called The Real Ghostbusters. But a really, really smart art direction for the game that isn't trying to be photorealistic, that I think will age really, really well. That also lends itself to the ghosts design and the level design is really smart, where you're in these, you know, air quote, real world spaces, but clearly built to be a map, you know, a gameplay map where you're hunting this ghost and the ghost has abilities to kind of, or you're playing as the ghost to move around space in interesting ways and get things done. And so the core gameplay loop is a 4v1, four players as the Ghostbusters, one as the ghost. And or you can, you know, again, play solo and have AI fill those roles. And the ghost is trying to get a haunt meter to 100, which is done by like scaring civilians that the Ghostbusters can then go and calm down. And some of the some of the dialogue that happens there is, I think, intentionally funny. It's funny regardless. Some of it is like, you know, very cheesy, but it feels knowingly cheesy, you know, like, oh, this museum is a great place to be. Now that I see that exhibit, you know, it's just like this person gets harassed by a ghost. And then you're like, no, it's cool. It is cool. Thanks, Ghostbusters. Like, you know, keeping these people in this environment. And they're trying, you're trying to do that as the ghost to hit this 100 meter. And as the Ghostbuster, you're trying to trap and contain the ghost before that happens and seek out rifts. Because if you don't get rid of the rifts, then the ghost kind of has an infinite spawn. So you use your tools to walk around the space, your PKE and your proton pack and then your trap and all this stuff to locate the ghost, locate the rifts, blow them up, and then contain and trap the ghost. And that core gameplay loop is fun and rewarding as you're running around these maps. The knocks against this game in my playtime with it are you need a reverence for the IP, which I think as I've played a lot of these kind of lends true to all of them. The fact that there are so many that are largely similar and you don't kind of hear about them, you know, several weeks after their release, it's like, do you love this IP? Well, you're going to revisit it. And without that, I don't know. I think there's a reason why there hasn't been this style of game that's just new IP, you know, that has the legs enough to stand on that gameplay loop. And then friends, the AI in Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed isn't great. And that, in my opinion, there's nothing more frustrating than having an AI controlled character not play their role, or not only not even play their role, but just stand in a corner and instead of throwing a trap or instead like, yeah, I could see it wants you to be the hero and have that hero moment, I guess, if you're able to. But there were frustrating moments of the AI not doing a support role well. And then I found some stuff finicky about the trapping mechanism itself. There's training and, you know, it walks you through it and you play enough, you kind of get the hang of it. But I never felt, it never felt 100%. I was sure it was going to happen. And that variability also didn't feel like the gameplay element. Like your proton pack can overheat and that's part of it. Like, do I have it tethered strong enough to pull it toward the trap? Or if that, you know, oh no, I used my proton pack too early and I'm going to overheat, so I have to release. And that's kind of a push pull. But other times I feel like I had everything right and it still didn't click for me. And I'm not sure what I did wrong. And that aspect of it felt frustrating. But again, going back to how I started this, if you are a fan of Ghostbusters and you have a squad of friends that are also fans of Ghostbusters that will regularly get together and play this game, it's a super easy recommend hang, you know, play with your friends golf game, as I've called them before. You can upgrade your kit. There's different ghosts. But it is that gameplay loop, right? It's not going to suddenly change at some point and be something bigger or different. But I think they nailed the Ghostbusters-ness of it. And I think for a lot of people, that's going to be enough.
Did you play as both sides?
I did some ghosting. I am not a good ghost.
Is the gameplay style of each side interesting? I mean, I kind of understand what being a Ghostbuster would be, but is the ghosting fun?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're running around trying to mess stuff up, you know, and scare people and trash the place and kind of be a pest. Oh, and one cool mechanic that I didn't talk about is that there's kind of a save at the end where if the ghost does get it to 100, I don't remember exactly how long or what the timer is on it because I didn't pull it off. I didn't get to it that many times. I didn't pull it off. But even when you hit 100, there's like that last rush to go and still trap the ghost, which is kind of a cool final moment. And another cool thing I think for this IP is that as a Ghostbuster, you're never knocked out, which I think is also problematic for some of these games where you're having a fun time playing, but the killer kills you early. And then you're like, I guess I'll requeue or I'll spectate. You know, this is awkward because you are a Ghostbuster. You'll get slimed, you'll get slowed down, but you're always in the match until it's over. And that, I think, is fitting for the IP and also a really smart gameplay tweak for this 4v1 style of game.
Yeah, I played this game as a preview, like, March-ish. And, like, it was fun. I don't think I'm in the category of people who I think would come back to this more often. Like, I like Ghostbusters. I don't love it. I don't have friends that would want to come back and play this weekly. But the bit I played, I think if you do fit that category, then yes, this is going to be... I'm obviously friends with Greg Miller. He is in the game. But he is the kind of person for whom this game is made.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hard part about this game. Like, again, I think it's really well made, and it clearly has an audience that will eat it up. And I hate saying this week after week on this show, and I feel like I say it a lot, but it's probably strongest as a mode in Fortnite than as a standalone game. I think because there are so many of these, and they all have subtle tweaks to it, and again, none of them seem to have the legs that folks are still talking about it a year or two later. I think it kind of shows what the lifespan is for it, but also maybe that's okay. I think it's a 40, again, I got a code. I think it's a $40 purchase, so it's not asking $70 from you. And if that's fun for 3 months, it's probably worth it. So it's probably doing what it sets out to do.
Yeah. Also, you mentioned the very good performances, and they, like, one of the smartest things I feel like they got Rahul Kohli as one of the characters. And, like, that's just smart. Like, get good actors who love Ghostbusters to voice actor Ghostbuster game.
Yeah.
Yes. Bring the passion. Yeah.
Well, that's Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed. What else is on your playlist, Christian?
I think we have this game in common, Lego Brick Tales. I was also provided a review code for this game. Yep, and folks that have listened to this show have heard us talk about, we were very excited about it.
Definitely.
Based on the trailer and the release. This game is a miss for me, Jeff, but I don't want to spend a lot of time poo-pooing it if you loved it. I can say what I liked about it, and then I could say where I think its biggest weaknesses are, but I'm curious how you want to approach it.
I wonder if we have the same view of its weaknesses. I think I came away from it probably liking it a bit more than you, but it definitely, its biggest, in my opinion, its biggest feature is its biggest weakness, which is... The reason we were excited about it, at least the reason I was excited about it, was, hey, here's a Lego game that actually focuses on putting together Legos, not just holding down a button while, you know, the next...
a minifig throws them together for you.
You know, Luke Skywalker builds an X-Wing by holding down A, and it just goes, which is satisfying in those games, and I enjoy those games, but that's not the joy of Lego for me. The joy of Lego is creativity, it's putting things together in novel ways. It's watching, figuring out how all those tiny little components form into something cool. That's the joy of Lego. It's kind of what I was talking about with Minecraft. It's like it is creativity, and none of the Lego video games really have demonstrated that, have leveraged that aspect of Lego. And here was a game. Excuse me. Here was a game that was going to do that, and I think that is its biggest feature, but is also unfortunately really cumbersome in the context of the game and really detracts from it. I actually got fatigued, you know, moving through. I think the game is gorgeous. I'm playing it on PC.
Yes.
I'm playing it on PC. It's gorgeous. I love, you know, just like in the Lego movies, seeing these very complicated digital versions of Lego where, like, these incredibly vast or cool, intricate, awesome biomes are made entirely of recognizable pieces from Lego, you know? Like, they didn't cheat, right? They actually designed it with all actual pieces you could acquire. That just is a delight. I just love looking at the worlds because they're vibrant, they're colorful, and they're built out of pieces that I know, right? It does all that really well. I think the story is fun, whatever. It's kind of simple and silly, but it's fun.
I think it's a little aged up. Because I also, aside from the building being cumbersome, I thought this would be a really fun game for my kids also, especially my oldest. But it made jokes that were clearly aimed at me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But and like there were some bigger words in there that I think my daughter, my oldest, would understand, be able to read, but not grok in terms of context. Mm. So I thought that was, and it was a little more story focused. I did not roll credits in it, but even from the biomes I played, I found I didn't expect it to be so story focused in terms of, oh, yeah, there's a lot there's of a narrative here.
Yeah. And it's really forcing it on you. But I ultimately, the problem is that as I progressed forward and I would get to another section where I needed to build something to keep moving forward, it takes you to a little, a building screen, and it shows you the pieces you have available and the problem you have to solve. And that's awesome. I'm like, yes. But as I kept going forward, I was like, oh man, this is going to be a lot of frustration where I can't get the piece exactly in the spot I want. And I'm fighting with the UI to manipulate in 3D space exactly where I want. This is a game that should be in VR. This game would be brilliant in VR. If I could reach in with my touch controllers and pick up a brick and put it where I want, it would be genius. But unfortunately, I'm dealing with twin sticks and trying to just click, click, click over in the 3D space and like go exactly under or above and try to get it on the, and it kind of is, it's trying to help me, but in trying to help me, it's hurting me by flopping
the camera and it like, yeah, warps the piece a little bit.
It like flops the piece into a, like you brush it up against another piece and it like, it goes, oh, you definitely want it on top of that. Like, no. I wanted it underneath. And you, it looks like it's underneath and you push place and you don't realize in the Z axis, you're like way behind where you wanted it to be. And it's like, oh man, I don't want to fight with this.
In a game that I think is best when it embraces experimentation, that's super frustrating. Because I found myself less willing to be like, let's see if this wonky vehicle will do. Because once you do it, you can simulate it. And I love that. I wish it showed you the simulation in the biome instead of in the build room.
Yeah.
Because I'd love to see that chaos, even though if it resets. But I love that you simulate it. And I think there'd be so much joy there in simulating wonky contraptions that like barely make it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so frustrated with the build that I would just be like, this is the boring way to do it. Go.
I know, right?
I didn't want to do that again. And I feel like I don't think the solution, I think VR is a great idea. And I hadn't thought of that. I'm not surprised you did, but I don't think it's quite a nut. Ratchet and Clank, Banjo and Kazooie nuts and bolts mechanic that I'd want. But that game, I feel like had building really. It was really fun. It was really, really fun to build wonky, zany stuff in that game. And I feel like there has to be a better way than how this game nails it. And it's just such a bummer because I have it on PC as well. I played on PC. I tried with a mouse. I played on Steam Deck. I tried with touch controls and it was never fun. I love building Lego IRL and it never captured that. And it was tedious, which was just a bummer.
And tedious is the word. And it really is a major bummer because it gets so much other right about the Lego experience. And it really felt like a labor of love, the game, but man, it's labor when you're playing it. And I just wanted to be able to reach in and pick up the bricks and move them. And I think, man, if they ported that to VR and let me actually do that and rotate things, like grab something, rotate it, use my other hand to pick up a piece, pluck it on. Like that's what I want. And it's a bummer. Anyway. Yeah. I think you and I are on the same page about this one, that it feels like a miss.
Yeah. It's a bummer. Lego Brick Tales. It was a miss.
On my playlist, the other game that I have been putting a bunch of time into is a game called Case of the Golden Idol. This is a game also I got a code for. And it is a very much a puzzle game, reminiscent of, I think, one of the great puzzle games of all time, Return of the Obra Dinn. If anybody has a memory of that game or has played that game, they know that it is a devilishly complex puzzle game, but its presentation is deceptively simple. And that's kind of how Case of the Golden Idol is as well. Basically, you are in the role of a detective, sort of unnamed and unless it happens at the end, I haven't gotten to the end, but you are sort of this disembodied detective and you get to visit these different crime scenes wherein murders have happened. and you attempt to solve the case by scouring the crime scene for clues and then thinking about those clues and filling out a page that basically has a bunch of blanks. It'll explain the crime with a bunch of blanks. So it'll be like blank blank took the blank and gave blank blank the blank. And it's like, when you have to fill all that information in. And the way you do that is you collect proper nouns, adjectives, verbs from the crime scene, and they get added to your potential list of words that you can enter in at the end. All right, it's an exploration screen and a thinking screen. And the thinking screen will have several windows of information, oftentimes identifying the people that you're seeing in the scene. So you have to figure out who is who, and you'll have to figure out certain other aspects of what's going on. And then a final like sentence or mini paragraph explaining the crime. And then you fill all that information in. And if you get it right, you complete the case. So the exploration of the crime scene is very much a sort of point and click type situation where you're just scouring this very static image for clues, for clickable, examinable things. And those can be, you know, clicking on people, and then you got to kind of get to see the contents of their pockets, clicking on, you know, letters or, you know, written statements or books, and you get a bit of text that'll give you some context clues. And then other really interesting, you know, hidden things in the environment that you'll put together. And they're very intricate puzzles. It starts pretty straightforward, and it gets real dense, real fast, where you get multiple screens that you can go back and forth in a single case, and things that are relating to others in very, you know, outside the box kind of ways. I'm really hooked on this game. It's much more, I found it to be a little more approachable than Return of the Obra Dinn was initially to me. That game just feels really overwhelming right away because you're dealing with time travel and like, all these, you know, it just feels very overwhelming. It doesn't give you much. And these is much more straightforward. Like, here's the case. It's self-contained. You don't have like tons of information overwhelming you at once. You know, the cases kind of start out slow and then get more complex as you move on. So I think it's much more approachable than Return of the Obra Dinn was. But I also think it's a pretty ugly game. They go to this very stylized pixel type art. That is actually kind of reminiscent of a color version of Return of the Obra Dinn. If you can recall, that game had a kind of this strange pixelization of all of its imagery. It's not
that game looked great though. It was like stark because it was just like I don't know if monochromatic is quite the right
yeah,
word.
But it was
game monochromatic.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. No, I agree. It is stark. This one, I feels. Unfair to say, but I would call ugly. I think it is an ugly game. The characters are kind of garish, and everything. None of it really works for me. And I initially was like, I'm not going to enjoy this. I don't like looking at it. But man, it drew me in just because. A excellent Steam Deck game, in my opinion, because while there's a lot of small text, I can just, you know, pull the Steam Deck close to my eyes to read the text, but. It's a great game. Most of what you do in this game is just sit there staring at it, right? You're not doing complex inputs all the time. You collect all the information in the exploration screen, and then you just like look and think and try to make connections and go, how does that relate to that? Who is this person? And it's just a great like laying in bed, laying on the couch, staring at my Steam Deck. So I highly recommend it for that. And man, I was totally drawn in. There's a larger story that unfolds as you solve cases. And you know, I was proud of myself that I never used the hint system. I have not finished the game, but it's getting to the point where the cases are so difficult. It's so intense. I'm like, man, I hope I don't have to indulge in the hint system, but at least it has a hint system. So I'm not turning to the internet for solutions, but it's very satisfying when you figure something out. And you can actually sort of just some of them you can just sort of brute strength, you know, brute force the answers where, because you're just filling in blanks, and you can be like, well, I only have six different people. I can just keep plugging in names if I need to. So there are ways
for solutions for Case of the Golden Idol. In Case of the Golden Idol, you'll require solutions. Solutions are things that help progress to the next case in Case of the Golden Idol, which is a video game requiring solutions.
Yeah, yeah. But I came away really, really positive on this game. If you're the kind of person that enjoys puzzle games or you know, escape rooms or anything like that, this'll, I think, really scratch that itch. It's clever. It makes you feel brilliant when you figure out the answers. They've got some really fun oblique ways to connect things and you have to do these kind of mental jumps. And as the cases go on, those get more and more intense and you go, man, I don't have any idea. Oh, these wonderful aha moments, you know? So, it's slow paced, ponderous puzzle game, but I think an effective one at that. Case of the Golden Idol. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Imran Khan, thank you so much for being here. It's always so much fun to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always fun to be on.
Awesome. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and the things that you're doing these days.
You can follow my Twitter at ImranZUMG. I also have a Patreon now, which is, it's a pun, so I have to actually like say the letters out loud. But the word is pros and cons of the name of the Patreon. It's prosekhans. So if you go to proscons.com, it's a double pun. If you go to proscons.com, you will find my Patreon. There's one level, which is just $5, and it's for just supporting my writing and a podcast we've got going with some former Fanbyte people as well.
Awesome. Very, very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
This week is exciting, and you'll hear about it later.
It does sound exciting. I can tell games. By the enthusiasm in your voice how exciting it is.
There's games, Jeff. There's games. It's the most wonderful time of the year, my friend, is what,
yes. Yeah.
Is what this week is. And I look forward to talking about them when we can.
Which is not going to be for a long time, Christian. You know that, right?
For some, not for others.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Have fun. Find me on the Discord.
That was a waste of everyone's minute and a half.
No, it was not. You asked me what I'm doing. That's what I had a thought. Uh-huh. That's what it is. And it's right. A good one. We're hanging out. Okay. Twitter, I'm not on it much anymore, but you can go there. Discord, I'm there a lot. Our community's great. Come hang out. I write a newsletter about once a month, long form about video games, and you can subscribe to that for free. tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I have other podcasts, including the Filmcast, where we talk about movies and TV shows. Search for the Filmcast wherever you get podcasts. I think you'll like it. I also think you might like We Have Concerns, which is a comedy science show I do with Anthony Carboni, talking about really interesting stuff. That'll make you laugh, I think, as you learn something. It's pretty cool. WeHaveConcerns.com. Also, I do the fan-controlled show, which is our sports show, talking about fan-controlled sports and entertainment, coming up on fan-controlled hoops, which is going to be absolutely wild. Absolutely wild. It's starting February. And it's NBA Jam in real life. And I'm not exaggerating. It is going to be incredible. LED courts that light up and can track the ball in real time. It's unreal. Wait until you see it. We're talking about it every week leading up to it and talking about other stuff and having a good time. It's fun dudes having fun. You can find that at twitch.tv/fancontrolledsports or as a podcast or on YouTube as well. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Imran, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah, so my partner and I went to a musical today called Jagged Little Pill, which is an Alanis Morissette-based musical.
What? Amazing.
Actually super cool. I don't know where it's playing besides San Francisco, but if you're in San Francisco or it's playing near you, I actually recommend it. Go check it out.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. And I'll have to dig a little bit into this. What is the story... have anything to do with Alanis Morissette, or is it just using her music to tell a completely unrelated tale?
It's just using her music to tell a tale about, like, it's a family, and, like, the mom is, like, a pill popper, and, like...
Amazing.
It's a human drama story, but it was interesting, and the music is good.
That's so funny. I always thought the jagged little pill was a euphemism for sperm.
It might be. I hadn't thought about it that way, but it's possible.
All right. Anyway, that sounds fascinating. I hope that I want to see that. I can't wait to see how they add work in ironic.
Oh, they do. They do it actually well. And also, You Want to Know hits the way it should, like as a big climax.
Amazing. Very, very cool. Well, that's Jagged Little Pill, the musical. Let's see if it's playing in your town. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Carly Rae Jepsen has a new album coming out, as does Taylor Swift. There's a bunch of great new music coming out here before next show-ish. So those are two to look for. And then very much being on theme as I was playing Ghostbusters, and it is still spooky season. Very much in our house, my kids and I showed my kiddos the OG Ghostbusters movie for the first time. Much like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and The Karate Kid and some of these other old movies from my youth, the original Ghostbusters movie very much holds up. My youngest described it as her favorite movie of all time at the beginning. Partway through, I don't like this movie. What's going to happen to her? Why are they being mean to her? She has feelings too. And then at the end of the movie, this was the best movie I've ever seen. I want to watch it again. So it stands the test of time. Great flick. Good performances all around. If you haven't seen it in a long time, it is worth a rewatch. It's the original Ghostbusters.
Finally, your children will get my references.
No, they haven't caught up on G.I. Joe. They're still on episode 427 of the 1,000 they made. So we're getting there, though, slowly but surely.
So, but at least I can say, tell them about the Twinkie, and your daughters will say, what about the Twinkie? That's the most important.
And then thing. We'll get to cats and dogs living together. Yeah. I mean, they've become fast friends with Greg Miller already. Like, their friendship with him is better than mine already, just from one watching. So
illustrious meal represents the last of the petty cash. All right, my parting gift is a show. What's it on? Is it on Hulu? I think it's on Hulu. I think it's FX on Hulu. Is a show called Welcome to Wexham. Have you heard of this, Christian?
It's like real life Ted Lasso, right?
It's real life Ted Lasso.
It's a documentary.
Yes, a documentary series about Rob McElhenney and
Ryan Reynolds.
Deadpool. Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Partnering up and buying an English football club and trying to take it from worst to first. It's delightful. It is delightful. It is it's really wonderfully made. Obviously, it benefits from the charm, the inherent charm of Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney. But it's also really kind of a good documentary for me as a Yank, as a filthy soccer person who barely understands why the sport is so popular all over the world. It really makes me go, oh, I kind of get it. I understand why people love this and why it means so much to people overseas. And it focuses on the town of Wrexham and what the team means to them. It's really heartwarming and lovely. And just as you would expect from like a Ted Lasso, it takes that feeling, that sort of wholesome feel good feeling, and runs with that as well. But in real life, it's great. Highly recommend Welcome to Wrexham. I'm watching it on Hulu, but I believe it's an FX original. All right. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It was sent by Kyler. And Kyler writes, I have a parting gift for all the astronomy aficionados in the audience. It's If the Moon Were Only One Pixel. Created by animator Josh Wirth, the webpage bills itself as a tediously accurate scale model of our solar system, that is, and is truly a work of art. The model opens with the titular one pixel moon depicted alongside a scale model sun. Viewers can then either scroll through the solar system via mouse or click a button to zoom through at light speed, which at this scale is really more like a leisurely stroll. Throughout the model, Josh peppers in interesting factoids and amusing quips that really put the scale of space in perspective. And for folks who don't have the literal hours it would take to visit each planet at light speed, there are handy buttons at the top that allow near instant teleportation to those planetary destinations. From time to time, especially when feeling weighed down by our world's woes, revisiting this page is a great reminder of how much more there is out there. And that will be joshworth.com, where you can find a click to the, a link to the If the Moon Were Only One Pixel. Thanks, Kyler. What a cool parting gift. I love that. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. We love hearing from you. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Imran Khan and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those cool bumpers. Thanks to White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold, for our theme song music. If you'd like to check out swag from our show, our logo on mugs and hats and t-shirts, go over to dlcswag.com. That's dlcswag.com. Thanks to Jesse J. Anderson, for sending that up. We really appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for downloading the show. We appreciate you as well, especially our patrons over at patreon.com/dlcpod. Check out the perks. Sign up if you're interested. Our topmost perk is called the Hype Train Level Patron, and those individuals get shouted out at the end of every episode, which I'm going to do right now.
Okay, let's get right to it. It's Jason Novak, Octavian Ratsiu. It's Taylor Wiggard and Christian Bravery. It's Jen and Josh Peek. Peter Olberg and Nick Strauss-Klein. It's Michael Stadler and Michael Buck. It's Travis and Jackson and Soren Silk. It's Mike Lombardo and the Spice Man Silencer. It's Yick and Zachary White. It's Albert of the Stuff and Junk Show Podcast. It's Stu Goss, Nate, Jenny, and Ben. It's Kevin Brazel and Scott Hughes. Jonathan Spiceman Forever Schlepfer, Dan Palmino, and Malcolm King. It's Jimmy Radcliffe and Mark Gowland, and it's Mitchell Ness and Jonathan Putney. It's Will with One, L. Harris. It's Chris Zacharias and Matt Bradley, Jonathan Talbert, Victor Valenzuela, Cheesy Bob and Scooby Diesel. It's Jeff Luxack and Hake Hatton. It's Adam Denby and Rob Rickman. It's Sasan. It's Riley Knox. It's Anthony Goulas and Kyle Starr. It's Dan Flanagan and Andy Joyce. It's Michael S. Relentless Rex and Matt Valdez and John Sisko. It's David Eppen, Hyperboy 66, Curtis from Louisville, and comedian Aaron Trahan. It's Shuri Yukin. It's all the Hype Train patrons. We're thanking you. Thank you all.
All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.